Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 15, Text 6.
Yetvananyena bhavena, bhavayantyatma bhavanam, Atmani Protabhuvanam.
Param Sat. Translation: O Lord, all these planets exist within yourself, and all the living entities are generated from you. Therefore, you are the cause of this universe. And anyone who meditates upon you without deviation attains devotional service. Translation, please repeat. O Lord, all these planets exist within yourself, and all the living entities are generated from you. Therefore, you are the cause of this universe. And anyone who meditates upon you without deviation attains devotional service. I'll read also the next verse, there's no purport. Text 7.
Tesham supakvayoganam jitas pasindriyatmanam labdayusmat pasaranam nakutas chit parabhava.
Translation: there is no defeat in this material world for persons who control the mind and senses by controlling the breathing process, and who are therefore experienced mature mystics. This is because by such perfection in yoga, they have attained your mercy. Purport: the purpose of yogic performances is explained here. It is said that an experienced mystic attains full control of the senses and the mind by controlling the breathing process. Therefore, controlling the breathing process is not the ultimate aim of yoga. The real purpose of yogic performances is to control the mind and the senses. Anyone who has such control is to be understood to be an experienced, mature, mystic yogi. It is indicated herein that a yogi who has control over the mind and senses has the actual benediction of the Lord, and he has no fear. In other words, one cannot attain the mercy and benediction of the Supreme Lord until one is able to control the mind and senses. This is actually possible when one fully engages in Krishna consciousness. A person whose senses and mind are always engaged in the chandal service of the Lord has no possibility of engaging in material activities. The devotees of the Lord are not defeated anywhere in the universe. It is stated, Narayana para sarve, one who is Narayana para, or a devotee of the Supreme Personality of God, it is not afraid anywhere, whether he is sent to hell or promoted to heaven. Bhagavatam 6:17:28. Tesham supakvayoganam jitas vasendriyatmanam labdajusmat pasaranam nakutas chit parabhavaha. Translation: there is no defeat in this material world for persons who control the mind and senses by controlling the breathing process, and who are therefore experienced mature mystics. This is because by such perfection in yoga they have attained your mercy. So the demigods are continuing to offer their prayers to Lord Brahma. And as we were saying yesterday, Lord Brahma is very reverentially addressed. Deva Deva Jagat Dhatu Lokanatha Sikamane Paramesham Aparisham Tvam Bhutanamashi Bhavavid. You are the God of the demigods. Very beautiful. Sustainer of the universe. Head jewel of the demigods. Of all the planets. Lord Brahma's position is very exalted, and here it is mentioned in the first verse that we read that actually All the planets exist within Lord Brahma, and the living entities are generated from Lord Brahma also. Now, of course, we understand that the father of Lord Brahma is the Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. And we were explaining yesterday that within each universe, the Lord expands from the Karanadakshaya Vishnu, the Mahavishnu, and enters into each universe as the Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. From him, the Garbhodak ocean is generated. He lies on the Ananta Sesha, on the Garbhodak ocean, at the bottom of the universe. No one can see him. This is mentioned yesterday, and we were explaining a little bit by Prabhupada, that he is unseen. He is avyakta. He is unmanifested. He is not seen even by Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma, when he tried to find the origin of his own creation, went into the whirl of the lotus flower, into the stem, and went down and down, but could not come to the end of it. And then he had the sound. He heard the sound vibration. Tapa. He went back up and performed tapasya and meditation, but he could not actually find the source of his own creation. He could not see the Supreme Lord in his form as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. Yet it is from the Supreme Lord Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, the lotus stem, the lotus flower, and then Lord Brahma is born. He appears on top of that lotus flower. So we cannot understand things in the world just by our using our eyes and our nose and our touch and everything. We have to learn from what is the instructions given in the Shastras. So the Shastras give you this description of the Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. So it is said that there is the creation, then there is the destruction of the universe, the pralaya, and all the living entities, when there's partial annihilation, they go back. And all the planetary systems, they merge back into the Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and ultimately at the end of the universe, they go back into the Karanadakshaya Vishnu. But all the universes are there within the abdomen, and all the living entities are within the abdomen of the Mahavishnu and then into the Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. They are like in the seed form. They are transferred through the lotus stem into the body of Brahma. It's a very amazing thing. The descriptions in various Puranas in the Srimad Bhagavatam that this lotus stem and the flower, lotus flower, glowing white of the transference of so many living entities. This is descriptions. The living entities, the universes, the planetary systems, not the universes, from Garbhodakshaya, all the planets, they're in the seed form. They go from the abdomen of the Garbhodakshaya Vishnu through the lotus stem into the body of Lord Brahma, and the living entities also transfer into the body of the Lord Brahma. And this is why in this verse today the demigods address Lord Brahma in this way: all these planets exist within yourself. Now they are referring to Lord Brahma. They are not referring to the Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, although we know from other descriptions the planets are in the Garbhodakshaya. The living entities also in them. And all the living entities are generated from you. This is also mentioned, stated here. So the planets exist within yourself, the living entities exist. So therefore that transference of the planets and the living entities, the planets are in seed form, the living entities are small. They go via the lotus stem, via the lotus flower, into the body of Lord Brahma in their seed form. And so first of all, the planetary systems come out from the body of Lord Brahma. This is a very amazing thing. Because, you know, our own bodies, we are very minuscule in comparison to the gigantic form of Lord Brahma. There's one description of Lord Brahma that he is so huge that even his swan carrier, 1 foot of the swan carrier could cover the whole earth. This is the swan carrier of Lord Brahma. Now when Lord Brahma goes different places, he has an ethereal body. He can change his form. He can become big, he can become small. So he changes his form accordingly. But actually his form in the Brahmaloka is very huge. Very, very huge. So all these planetary systems, all the living entities are there in the seed form. They come out. So it's an amazing thing. Each day of Brahma this happens. Because we know at the night of Brahma there is pralaya, all the universe is in darkness. There's partial pralayas. All these things are explained here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. After every change of Manu, there's a destruction up until the heavenly planets. And then at the end of the day of Brahma, or even the heavenly planets are submerged under the water, all is dissolved. They go back into the Garbhadakshaya, Vishnu, and so on. And so they come every day of Brahma, this goes on. So every day he's doing the creation. Every day. He is a full-time service. Every day he is doing like that. The planetary systems come back. The living entities are impregnated into their various situations. And now, yesterday it was mentioned that Lord Brahma, one of his features, Namo Vijnana Viryaya, the source of all strength and knowledge. And one of the qualities of Lord Brahma, I mentioned yesterday also, that Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, has the 55 qualities of the Supreme Personality of God. They have five qualities over and above of the ordinary jivas. And so one of those qualities, all cognizant, all knowing. So Lord Brahma, by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, knows the actual situation for all the living entities and where they're supposed to go. All the planetary systems, all these things. An amazing position. So therefore, only a very qualified person, of course he's in Jivatma, but he's a very empowered Jivatma. Only a very qualified, empowered Jivatma can occupy the post of Lord Brahma. Now I read in a few places that who is chosen. Someone who is who's been a perfect Brahmana for 100 births, he can be considered for the post of Lord Brahma. And if he is qualified, then he is. Everything is arranged by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the one. He is the jiva. He will be empowered. He will be infused with the knowledge and the power to perform this service, the creation. To oversee the Rajaguna, all these things. Now, I also mentioned that if there's no one, no Jivatma qualified, then sometimes the Supreme Lord Vishnu himself becomes the Lord Brahma. Because it is a very qualified position. Not an ordinary living entity can perform this type of service. So anyway, these things are happening. So the demigods are understanding this point. That all the planetary systems are existing within Brahma, all the living entities are existing, and then he manifests them, in sequence, according to their situations. Therefore, you are the cause of the universe. You are the cause of the universe. But we know ultimately he is definitely all the planetary systems and the living entities, but he's not actually the ultimate cause. The ultimate cause is Vishnu, and then from the Garbhadakshaya, the Karanajal, the Mahavishnu, Sankarshan, and so on. Ultimately, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Anyone who meditates upon you without deviation attains devotional service. Now, Lord Brahma, while performing all these services, is still a great devotee. He is still a very great devotee. He doesn't lose his Krishna consciousness, although there have been some incidences. But after the time he received the mercy of the Supreme Lord, at this particular Lord Brahma, he is Govinda Mari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. In his maturity, out of his love, we have the Brahma Samhita, those prayers that he composed after he received the mercy. So he is a very great devotee. So someone who meditates on the Supreme Personality of Godhead without deviation, or someone who meditates upon the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is 100% engaged in the service of the Lord, he attains the same benefit that he attains unalloyed devotional service. This is the benefit of seeking out. Of course, to approach the Lord directly, this is not possible for the ordinary living entities, because pavitram, the Lord is all pure. He actually reciprocates on the level of prema, in pure loving mood with his pure devotees. So when the Lord descends, he descends with his pure devotees, and he engages in pastimes with his pure devotees. So those who are not on that level cannot directly engage devotionals. They have to go via someone who is very, very advanced, and someone who is 100% engaged. This is the direction and instruction of all the Shastras and all the Acharyas. Everyone says like that. Don't directly. You can don't directly come. He who says he is my devotee is not actually my devotee. But he who says he is a devotee of my devotee, he is my devotee. He is a devotee of my devotee. He who says directly my devotee, not the devotee. The devotee of the devotee. Prabhupada would always instruct us like that. We have to become purified. I remember my initiation actually here in St. Kilda in Melbourne. Prabhupada said like that. He said that actually we used to do these yogis and things, but no one, and we used to chant this Om Apovitra Pavitra Vashava Shamed, but no one knew the meaning of it. And so Madhavisa, at the time of the initiation, he actually asked Prabhupada, what is the meaning of this mantra? Prabhupada explained, Om Apavitra Pavitrava, yes, the Pundarika, the lotus-eyed Lord. He is the supreme pure. Whether purified or unpurified, one who associates with the supreme pure, he becomes purified. So, and then he said to all the initiates, he said, so all you new initiates, you have to become purified as quickly as possible. In this life, he said, in this life, don't wait for our other life. What is the guarantee, other life, what you will be? In this life, in this one life, become purified very quickly and go back home, back to Godhead. Prabhupada would say that quite often. And phrases like that. Become purified, engage in devotional, and go back home, back to Godhead. And all the devotees would always go, Jai Prabhupada. So they would say, he would always go back home, back to Godhead. Why loiter in the material? He said so many times, to go back home, back to Godhead. In this life, don't wait for other lives. In this life, go back home. But, of course, one has to get the mercy of the pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here, the demigods are stating this this fact that one who meditates on Lord Brahma, he is such an exalted devotee. He is the creator. He is an advanced devotee. He is the head of our sampradaya. Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. He is the head acharya. So therefore, one who meditates... Of course, it is said that we can meditate on Lord Brahma, but even to approach Lord Brahma, it is best to go through the sampradaya, through the parampara, through the chain of the disciplic succession, through the all the gurus and to the current guru. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he actually says, to follow one's immediate, he said actually, the recent guru, to follow the recent acharyas and one's guru is actually more essential than following the predecessor acharyas, because all the acharyas preach according to Kala Patradesh, he says. Time, place and circumstance. So whatever is the instruction from the Supreme Personality of Godhead carried in the parampara, that will be presented just nicely according to what is the situation now. And that would be presented by the guru according to the situation now. So therefore we have to understand by our present, the gurus who are present now, because they are presenting in this way for our understanding. One, of course, can meditate as far as in understanding instructions, better to go through the present guru or the immediate gurus. But any meditation on a very advanced soul one brings devotional service. So therefore, we should always seek out association with advanced devotees. Advanced devotees always like to seek out association with other very advanced devotees. Today is the appearance day of Virabhadra Goswami, who was the son of Lord Nityananda. Lord Nityananda had two wives, Vasudha Devi and Janava Devi, who were formerly in the Krishna Leela. One was Varuni and the other one was Revati. And of course, Lord Nityananda was Lord Balaram. So they again came. Lord Balaram came as Lord Nityananda, and his two wives, Varuni and Revati, came as Vasudha and Janava Devi. Vasudha was the elder. So with Vasudha, the Lord had two children. With Janava Devi, there was no children. And one was Virabhadra Goswami, the other one was Ganga Devi. It is mentioned that Virachandra Goswami, he is none other than the incarnation of the Chiradakshaya Vishnu. The Lord Vishnu, who is residing in this universe, we have the Garbhadakshaya Vishnu lying on the bottom on the Garbhadak ocean of the universe, then on the Svetadvipa, planet of the Svetadvipa, the Chiradaksha Vishnu, the incarnation of Chiradaksha Vishnu, he appeared at Virabhadra. So he is already the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but the Shastras, the Acharya's comment, he always presented himself very humbly, just a devotee. He never made any claims as far as his position, but he was very a beautiful child. There's a whole description of that when he was growing. Very, very beautiful, and everyone was very attracted to him. Later on, he actually took shiksha and diksha from Janavi Devi, who was his auntie. He took the diksha from her. And he was always associating with all the devotees in around the Mayapur Nabadwip area. And later on, he went for pilgrimage to Vrindavan. So there's many stories in regard to Virabhadra. But he is such a wonderful devotee. So when we remember these great devotees, we meditate upon their activities, their instructions, their pastimes, and we are so benefited. So this is actually the culmination and perfection of any type of yoga. Full absorption, as mentioned here, without deviation, meditating on Lord Brahma without deviation. So in the next verse that we read, there is no defeat in this material for any person who controls the mind and senses. Now, here the demigods refer to controlling the mind and senses by the breathing, by the pranayama. There's no defeat. Those who have become experienced, mature mystics, they have become perfect in the yoga. They attain your mercy. Now, Prabhupada goes on to explain about the yoga principle and the purpose of the yoga. Now, by following this particular pranayama, Astanga Yoga, is mentioned by the demigods. And we know that Astanga Yoga means starting yama, niyama, and then asana. And then pranayama. Now, of course, yama, niyama, the do's and the don'ts of the moral practices. And then we have asana. So asana is quite comprehensive. One has to study. Anyone who's done some astanga yoga or hatha yoga knows that to do any asana takes a lot of practice. You need training under a qualified teacher. And by the asana, and then pranayama also, is quite a detailed and comprehensive study that takes quite some time to learn the techniques of the pranayama. There are some schools, especially in India, well, we have in the West, but I don't know exactly, they're teaching the full pranayama, because I know the full pranayama is a many years course, how to do just pranayama. But certainly by following asana and pranayama, one can gain more and more control of the senses and the mind. And of course the goal is, and if you follow the Ashtanga Yoga, there's Pratyahara, Dharana, Jhana and Samadhi. Now, Pratyahara means controlling the senses. So in other words, Yama Niyama, Asana, Pranayama come to the next stage means controlling the senses. Dharana means controlling the mind. So this is the natural sequence. It's not, you know, just to do asana, just for the sake of asana and pranayama, just to sake it, to keep the body healthy. That is a side effect. And it's not the ultimate goal of the practice of the Ashtanga Yoga. One has to come to control the mind. One has to come to control the senses. Now, here it is said that when one has come to this position of controlling the mind and senses, then one has no fear. Now, there's a relation between controlling the mind and senses and fear. Because when one is born in the world, one gets a particular type of body with senses and mind, and the conditioned soul wants to enjoy in the world with their senses and mind. The eyes want to see certain things, the ears want to hear, the nose wants to smell, the tongue wants to taste, the hands want to touch, and so on. And the mind is thinking so many things. Now, because the conditioned soul is in ignorance, doesn't know that actually the purpose of life is to engage the mind and senses in the service of the Lord, and then become purified, and then get out of the material, go back home, back to God. They engage in material, in gratification in the world. So gratification with the senses in the world, there's going to be duality. It's an incongruous situation. Everything is temporary. Even the senses of the body are temporary, the things of the world are temporary, and they're affected by the modes of material nature. So in other words, when you see something, some things are going to be pleasurable, other things are going to be painful. When you hear something, some things are going to be pleasurable, other things are going to be painful. When you smell something, some smells are going to be pleasurable, some smells are going to be painful, distressful. When you taste something, some tastes are going to be nice to you, some not so nice. You touch something, some are going to be nice. Your thoughts, some are going to be pleasant thoughts, some are not going to be pleasant thoughts. So therefore, now you're Ananda Maya, you're pleasure seeking, but you're not the controller of things in the world. So when you interact with the world in that attitude to enjoy, but then you get the other side of so-called enjoyment in the world, which is pain, then you become fearful because you don't want the pain. Understand? This is the link. This is the link between controlling the senses and mind and fear. You become afraid of the distress and the pain. Because automatically, by indulging the senses in materialistic activities, there'll be pain and pleasure. You'll just want the pleasure, but you'll get the pain. So then a fearful, anxiety-full situation will be created in your own mind, within your activities, and then you'll be in fear. Fear will be created. So as long as your mind and senses are not under control and just unregulatedly, indiscriminately, in trying to engage in activities and enjoy in the world, there will be fear. Understand this point? There will be fear because of dualities. There will be fear. But here, Prabhupada explains, but someone who's got the senses and mind under control, there'll be no fear. Because the mind and senses, when engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that is an absolute position. That is not a position of duality. There's no pain and pleasure there. Now, if we're engaging in devotional service and still we're experiencing fear and distress, that means we're not fully engaging. That means our minds are wandering, our senses are wandering. So therefore, we still experience in the beginning stages some fear. But the more one is 100% engaged with the mind and the senses in the service of the Lord, the more one becomes freed from fear, because it is an absolute position, and that position is anandamaya vyasa. Anandamaya, it is always blissful. It is always pleasurable. So if someone is always in pleasurable and engaging the senses in that way, continuously, without deviation, then wherever they go, it'll be the same situation. You see? You follow? This is just an analytical kind of sequence of logic here. Because the senses are controlled from within your own self, then wherever you go, it'll be the same. But if you're externally trying to enjoy, then everywhere you go will be a different situation, and some will be pleasurable, some will be painful. And so you'll be ascertaining whether this place is nice for you or that place is not so nice for you. And so you'll have fear, and then you'll start to discriminate which place you like to go, which place you don't like to go. One time when Prabhupada, I was just reading in Jamuna's recollections of her time with Srila Prabhupada, that when they were in Vrindavan, her and her husband and other devotees were put in charge of the constructing of the Krishna Balaram temple. So it was a very difficult situation for them, Westerners coming there and everything, and Prabhupada was encouraging them, of course, but pushing on them to complete the project and everything. So one time they came out of, after the actual inauguration of the temple, they were so blissful after so much energy and so much endeavor, and it was so blissful. But then they left, and they were with Prabhupada, and they went to Delhi. And one of the devotees commented to Prabhupada, "Oh, it was so nice in Vrindavan with the spiritual world, but now it's like we're in the hell here." And Prabhupada said, "Oh, why do you think like that?" He said, "Vrindavan is not just a place. Vrindavan is in your heart. So wherever you go, there will be the Vrindavan. Why are you making distinction? Vrindavan is in your heart. Whether you're there, whether you're here, wherever you are, Vrindavan is there." And I always remember this very clearly. When he came here, one reporter asked him at the airport, "Oh, how you like Australia, your divine grace, how you like this country?" Prabhupada said, "Oh, I like it everywhere." What is the difference? What country? So for someone who is controlling the mind, controlling the senses, engaged in pure, loving, devotional service, and then what is the difference where he goes? Everywhere is the Vaikuntha, everywhere is Vrindavan. There is no fear. Now, here, demigods talk about the Astanga Yoga and then how the endeavor to, by pranayama, to control the mind and senses. Then, of course, after controlling the mind and senses, then you've got to go to dhyana, meditation, and of course samadhi. But the beauty of direct engagement in devotional service, you're accomplishing all these things in one action. In other words, when you engage the mind and senses in devotional service, there's no need to perform, you know, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, and dharana, because the mind and senses are engaged in the absolute. So the purpose of Astanga is to gradually bring you to the absolute position in samadhi, dhyana and samadhi, right? But devotional service engages you in the absolute position and engages your mind and senses. So by one stroke, you're controlling the mind and senses because they're engaged, And at the same time, you're in the position of devotional service. That's the beauty of devotional service. The beauty of bhakti yoga. And I often recall that when Prabhupada was here, the ladies were making the flower garlands for the deities. And Prabhupada was talking, he was giving a lecture, and he was talking about yoga. And then he stopped and he said, just like these ladies, he said, I consider them the best of the yogis. Because they are making the garland for Radha and Krishna. And they are not thinking other things. So that is the perfection of the yoga. That is the goal of the yoga. To come to the position of full absorption in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they are the best of the yogis. So one is the best of the yogis just by making the garland. But without thinking other things. Don't think anything else. Just you're making the garland. You're thinking about this garland is for Radha. This garland is for Krishna. This garland is for Jagannath. This garland is for Lord Chaitanya. This one is for Lord Nityananda. So this is a very, very advanced devotee. Very, very advanced. There was one famous devotee in South India, Bhakti Sa. And he was elderly and he practiced detachment. He was living in the Sri Rangam area. And he was just detached. He was living, he didn't accept anything from anyone, whatever was lying, even a cloth. He didn't go to purchase anything. He was just living outside and whatever was lying. And sometimes when his cloth was torn, he would just be stitching. And so one time Lord Shiva and Parvati was flying overhead in that area. So it is said wherever Lord Shiva, Parvati, if their shadow falls on someone, it's very auspicious. Everyone runs to get the blessing of Lord Shiva and Parvati. But even if they get the shadow, they're so fortunate. So then their shadow went on this bhakti sar. And so he saw the shadow, he looked, and he moved out. So Parvati said to Lord Shiva, said, a very strange fellow. Normally people run after even our shadow, but this fellow here, he's moving out. Let us go down there. So they went down, and so Parvati said, he seems like very devout person. No, let us test him. Go and offer him the heaven. All opulences. No, actually, first of all, offer him all opulences of the world. And Lord Shiva said, he is a bhakta. He won't be attracted to these things. No, go ahead, do it. So he went. And then he was offering all these things. And Bhakti Sai, he was sowing. He didn't even look up. Then Lord Shiva looked back, said, offer him heaven, heaven. He can go to heaven. So then he made the offering. We're very pleased with you. We want to give you the benediction of heaven. Still he was just sowing. So then Lord Shiva looked back. Ask him what he wants then. And he asked him, then what can we give you? And then this Bhakti Sar said, can you give the liberation from the world to go to the Supreme Godhead? Lord Shiva said, oh, that you have to go to Lord Vishnu. And that's when he made that famous, Lord Shiva said, Mukti Pratara Savishan Vishnu Evana Shamsha. He said, for the Mukti and for the liberation from the world, that Lord Vishnu. We can give the other things, but Lord Vishnu you have to go. Then he said, then what is the use? I'm not interested in any of these things. So then both Parvati came over, and Lord Shiva, we are very pleased with you. You have shown great devotion to the Supreme Lord Vishnu. We are happy. We bless you that you will always be engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of God. And that devotee became very famous as a great devotee of the Lord. So one should be so engaged like that. But when one is engaged in devotional service, if he follows very nicely all the instructions of the Shastra, the instruction of the Guru, of the Acharyas, and he engages, then he will get the paramjishva, the higher taste. The higher taste. And very naturally, he will be disinterested. And Prabhupada told us many times, that is one of the symptoms of actually making advancement, is that you start to lose your interest in the materialistic things. We don't want to go here or there or do the other things that materialists are doing, because we're experiencing something much higher. So when one experiences something much higher, Narayana Para is mentioned here. Narayana Para Sarve, one who is Narayana Para, or devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is not afraid anywhere, whether he's sent to hell or promoted to the heaven. Actually, hell or heaven is no difference for him, as long as he can engage in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I'll read this verse again. Tesham supakpa yoganam jita svanindriyatmanam labda yuzmat prasaranam nakutas chit parabhava. There is no defeat in this material world. Persons who control the mind and senses by controlling the breathing process, and who are therefore experienced mature mystics. This is because by such perfection in yoga, they have attained your mercy. Any questions or comments? Yes, honey.
I mentioned this earlier, that if one meditates on Lord Brahma, then one is, what does it say, liberated? Or is it engaged in the
One who meditates upon you without deviation attains devotional service. Seems contradictory.
Prabhupada didn't encourage us to meditate on the demigods or worship the demigods, and the ten offences more or less, encourage us in a similar vein. Yet we find here that we're being encouraged to meditate on one of the demigods, Lord Brahma. So there must be a quality of that meditation. We're not supposed to meditate on Lord Shiva. Or Shiva, yet he's a great devotee, and Lord Brahma is also a great devotee. So on the one hand, we're encouraged to worship the devotees, but on the other hand, not to worship the demigods in one sense.
Yeah. No.
What's the quality of?
Well, the quality is that you have to, there's a certain mood. There's a certain mood as far as these great demigods like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, that you think of them in their position as great devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so in that way, they're worshipful. If the offense is you think them independent from the Supreme Personality, and worship them and think them that they are themselves the Supreme Godhead. So we understand that Lord Brahma is such a great devotee. He is the founder, acharya of the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. So that in that way, he is worshipable. Lord Shiva, as a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of God, he is worshipable. So it's a question of what attitude that the devotee has. Then one can actually meditate on Lord Brahma in that way. One can meditate on Lord Shiva in that way. But in general, Prabhupada didn't encourage it so much because he saw that his disciples could be very easily distracted. distracted. So he wanted to establish exclusive worship of Radha and Krishna. And although these things are allowed, you know, in their great devotees, still he didn't emphasize it so much. You know, and he just emphasized mainly you worship Radha and Krishna. Like that. But definitely, you know, Lord Brahma is a great devotee, and one who meditates on him with that attitude that he is a great devotee, he is a representative of the Supreme Personality of God, he is infused by the Supreme Personality to give transcendent knowledge. Then if you meditate on him in that way, then you attain the great devotional service. So it's a question of attitude. Yes.
Bhakti Vinod Thakur said that we are caught up in a fisherman's net, and unless we glorify Krishna or chant the holy name, we can never get out of this material.
We can't get out of the net.
You mentioned that Prabhupada had that vision of seeing every. Even he said here, you know, this is not Melbourne, this is Vaikuntha. Yet, we see, especially in Kartik, the devotees want to go to Vrindavan. Maybe even those who say, you know, you have to go to Vrindavan. Prabhupada said you've got to go to Vrindavan, you know. Yet Prabhupada himself never went. I think once in all of his, you know, 14 years or so of preaching, he spent Kartik in Vrindavan. He himself didn't make a habit. Well, there's the Nectar of Devotion lectures.
What's that?
There's the Nectar of Devotion lectures.
Yeah.
And Prabhupada, that was, as I understand it, the only time that Prabhupada was actually in Vrindavan, in Kartik, mm-hmm. with his disciples. But otherwise, he would be somewhere else in the world, you know.
Preaching.
Mm. You know, now we've got this kind of, and in one sense, you know, Prabhupada really only encouraged the devotees to go to India for the Mayapur festival. He didn't really emphasize Kartik, and it seems like in that mood of, you know, wherever you go, it's Vrindavan. Now, we could say, oh, Prabhupada's a very elevated devotee, so he doesn't need to, you know, he doesn't need to do that. We're not so elevated, and so therefore we need to go to, you know, we need to go to the Dharma. But then you mentioned devotional service is so unique that even you're making garlands, you're already on the highest platform.
Yeah.
The problem is we're making garlands for Krishna, but we're thinking about going to Vrindavan or not going. Yeah. We're thinking about going somewhere else.
Yeah.
Well,
it's you know, one thing is that, yeah, definitely Prabhupada's mood was like that, you know, that everywhere can be Vrindavan. But he did realize that still, you know, it's an absolute fact that is the situation if one absorbs himself in that way in full Krishna consciousness, and everywhere is Vrindavan. But he accepted that because of the of especially Kali Yuga and the modes of passion and ignorance, he did tell us that, yes, I realize you're 10%, you're preaching in all over the world, but, you know, even though you're 10% engaged, still because of the modes of passion and ignorance, you can be affected. So therefore, I encourage you to come every year to the holy dharms, because in the holy dharm, then there is a such elevated situation, and the effect of coming to the holy dharma will purify you even from that slight contamination of the mode of passion and ignorance. So Prabhupada did encourage the devotees to come every year to the festivals that he organized himself. You know, part would be in Mayapur, and the other part would be in Vrindavan. So therefore, I don't think you can say that to not encourage the devotees to go to the holy dharms. And as far as the Kartik time, I think you're very correct. There wasn't in Prabhupada's time, there wasn't a mood that, oh, now it's Kartik, now everyone should go to Vrindavan Dham. But what seems to have happened in ISKCON, I think, that previously, the festival organized in Prabhupada's time was half and half Mayapur, Vrindavan. But over the years, somehow or other, the Vrindavan site at that time of the year, you know, the Gopurnim time of the year, was it's still existing, but I haven't been for years, but it's not such a major. Before it was a major, you know, when you went to the Holy Dham at Gopurnim time, and Prabhupada would be there, then you would go to Mayapur, and then you would go to Vrindavana. And it was all arranged, all the devotees would do that. But now, for many years, it hasn't been like that. So now it seems to be broken into two, you know, Gopurnim time, mostly everyone goes to Mayapur, and Kartik time, everyone goes to Vrindavan. So in one sense, I can understand and agree with what you're saying, and the other side that I think that many of our senior devotees also go at the Kartik time, so they're getting the benefit of going to Vrindavan Dham, whereas perhaps in Gopurnim time they don't get the benefit of many don't go to Vrindavan Dham, you know. So especially many of our leaders, you know, we go to the Mayapur and we go to the meetings. And when the meetings are finished, we just fly back to our respective areas. We don't go to Vrindavan. So therefore, many of the leaders in the movement, they go to Vrindavan at Kartik time. So instead of doing it as was before, they break it into two. But definitely Prabhupada stressed and emphasized that every year the devotees, as far as possible, should come to the Holy Dham. And I remember one time Rameshwara Maharaj at the time, he said to Prabhupada that, you know, bringing all, especially all the book distributors every year, cost a lot of money on the airfares and so much time away from distributing your books to the Prabhupada and so much money. And then, you know, perhaps maybe they shouldn't come every year, and maybe just every year, you know, and we save money, and then also your book distribution will go on, you know, in that time so many books will. And Prabhupada just commented that, he said that, well, just like, is it necessary? And is it necessary that they come every year? That was the question. And Prabhupada said, is it necessary to eat? That's how he answered. He said, is it necessary to eat? Therefore, it is necessary. As far as possible, it is necessary. So I always remember that because, you know, there was that question. It did cost a lot of money and a lot of time away from the zone. Because we used to stay actually away for like 4 or 5 weeks. 5 weeks, maybe 6 weeks even. A lot of time for everyone to be away. So then the Ramachara asked that question. Prabhupada says, is it necessary? Is it necessary to eat? You must eat. You must come here. So Prabhupada was concerned for the spiritual health of his disciples. And he knew you know, we were going out every day. And many times he would ask us, you know, we're selling, we would report to how many books we were selling. And then Prabhupada says, but are you reading my books? You have to read your books also. So he was very concerned about the spiritual health of his disciples. So I think going to the Holy Dham as far as possible is very necessary for everyone. But of course everything has to be done in coordination. If you're temple devotees, then of course it has to be done in a very systematic way. Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki!
Jai!
Gopremanandi Hari Hari Bol.